For November the 17th, 2023, we talk about Sea of Stars, RoboQuest, Power Wash Simulator VR, and much more. Welcome to Level 480. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismuth.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, David.
Hey, good to be back.
Yeah, good to have you. I'm not going to go to you first, though. I defaulted to that because you've been away the longest. Want to lead here with a hearty happy birthday to Ben.
Oh, we found out a new rule in Who Goes First. Birthday trumps last on.
The canon expands.
Thank you. You
are kind enough to come in and record on your birthday.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
It has been a chill birthday.
Cool. I can hear you getting older while you talk.
I know. I think I've talked about this before. If you go back and listen to our early episodes, we talk a lot faster than we do now. So you can hear the aging process if you watch this.
I think we're also more confident is the thing.
Now.
I think there might be a little bit of not nervousness, but like newbiness, wanting to get it all out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Or now we just don't care.
No, I still care. Yeah, it's still real to me, damn it. Yeah,
it's like the kids. What if you?
Oh yeah, because if there's any moment of silence, somebody's gonna hop in. Yeah,
that's right.
Dead air.
You doing anything special?
I'm doing absolutely nothing except treating myself today. Nice. My dad was in town over the weekend. His birthday is a week before mine.
Oh, yeah.
So we usually do this where he'll come into town between our birthday weekends. And then, so I was busy just hosting and stuff like that. So I am very happy to just chill out and relax.
Nice.
I have some ramen I'm going to make after the podcast and nom on that. And I've already had lasagna and tiramisu today. So I'm feeling great.
Nice. Yeah. Surprised you're not asleep. Lasagna, man.
I took a nap as well. So got it on all bases. Yeah.
Nice. I don't know why I asked you, like, you doing anything? Because I never do anything for my birthday.
It's just
whatever. Yeah.
I just, contemplate my mortality. Not my morality. Never think about that.
Stop doing that since my 20s. Yeah.
Why not both? Yeah. Well, that's cool. Now, David. Now, how about you? What's going on?
Not too much. Went to a play this last weekend. Just billed as The Secret Play, and was this weird kind of surrealistic avant-garde play. Three actresses and three plays that may or may not be related.
Okay.
And I don't know, it was just all sorts of weird and not making sense. And then afterwards, cocktails with the guy who wrote and directed it.
Okay.
And just kind of discussed it with him. So it was fun.
Did it make more sense after talking to him?
He explicitly said the plays have no definitive meaning. They mean whatever you think they mean.
Hmm.
Classic artist.
Did you call bullshit on him? No, you can't fucking do that, you cop out.
You obviously meant something. Otherwise, you wouldn't have started this.
He insisted that the plays were related to him directly by some sort of goddess figure.
Okay.
So.
No.
I had an English teacher that claimed there was a voice that lived in his head that he would zone out and it would type for him. It's like a published author locally, so
that's
interesting.
Yeah, I do.
Very, very chill, otherwise normal dude. And then he like subbed for our English class and was like, I don't feel like teaching anything today, so let me tell you about my process.
Oh, yeah, geez. I was going to say, I feel like that's not a good match for an English teacher. Like, hey, teacher, how do I write this? Well, first you have to get super stoned.
He didn't explicitly say that was part of his process, but looking back, probably was.
That's better than schizophrenia, so.
Here's the thing. I don't understand how anybody does anything creative on pot. Like, fair. And not trying to denigrate everybody's like biology is different. I've gotten way more creative and productive juice out of alcohol than oh god.
Yeah. I feel like there's there's some sort of theory that's like on hallucinogenic substances, you can create, you know, extraordinarily creative and, you know, meaningful works of art, but you can only understand a work of art in the same headspace it was created, so only people who are also stoned can understand it.
I've never heard about that transferring to different people. I know that there's such a thing as like state dependent memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I valedictorian of electrical engineering the year I graduated took every single test drunk for that reason.
Yeah. Probably relaxes you too. Makes you again more confident. Confidence is the word this time.
Man, I shouldn't have used laxatives for my state dependency.
Yeah.
Like, was the production on the play cool? Like, did they do anything neat, like staging wise?
It was fairly minimalist, honestly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but yeah, no, it was cool. Yeah, cool. It was very cool.
I've got a funny theater related story. I was over at my mom's today, and you know, they had just recently visited some family friends. She was telling me these two family friends who are, I'm not going to be unkind because they're not here to defend themselves, to let's call them traditional. They've got some pretty backward views about particular things. But if you know, they're always down to get free stuff. And through the library, they ended up getting tickets to go to a little show at the Renaissance Theater here. This was a few weeks ago. So you know, it's a nice theater. It's pretty expensive. And they went, and given the facts of what I described to you, how would you believe that they reacted if I told you that it was a screening of Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Did they get V's written on their forehead?
No. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I feel like, though, Rocky Horror Picture Show is weird enough that I feel like a sufficiently vanilla person that could just go entirely over your head.
Yeah, it's they left the second anything gay started happening. Yeah,
so, like
they
made a few damage in it.
Yeah, and anything gay that they could discern. So they were like, why are people throwing rice? Why is there water being squirted? Why is somebody running around? And then they were gone. So I thought that was very funny for two reasons. A, like, you're not going to give something to Google before you go see it.
Yeah.
And B, you're seriously like 60 plus years old and you've not absorbed that through cultural osmosis.
Yeah. I would have thought you'd at least have heard about it.
Yeah.
This is very interesting though, to retain those views, you need to be increasingly just obtuse about anything that could come across as gay.
Yeah.
And so you just kind of willfully have to blind yourself to it more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, those guys are really good friends, kissing on screen like that. I guess in that culture, it must be. Mm,
they must have been really good roommates. Yeah. So that's my theater story, unrelated.
Nice.
Dennis, what you up to?
Yeah, I haven't been to any theater, but I did see some really bad acting today.
Okay.
So,
watching Congress.
Oh boy, no. That is a clown show that I have not kept my hand on recently. But Milo, my second grader, comes in off the bus today. Dad, someone bit me. Look at this. And he holds up his bicep, and there is, true to life, just like a very pronounced bite mark kind of high on his arm. I'm like, someone bit you on the bus? Yeah. Who bit you? I don't know. And instantly,
oh boy.
Instantly, yeah, yeah. I start doing the mental like trigonometry to see like if he lifted his own arm to his mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be exactly. I said, did you bite yourself?
Huh.
Pause, and then he just shrugs.
What are you going to do about it?
He wanted to entertain you with a story.
Yeah, and so you know, I was like, so you bit yourself? You bit yourself, right? And again, he doesn't respond. I'm just like, so you're not saying you didn't bite yourself? So I'm assuming you bit yourself. You bit yourself really hard, dude.
Did he break skin?
He's committed to it. No, he didn't break skin quite. But we, you know, I laughed at that and I shared with him a story from my youth, where, you know, there's like those flimsy plastic cups, you know, you get, they serve water and it's like a step below a Solo cup,
like a Dixie cup.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, made with plastic. You know, you give a little suction while it's around your mouth and your chin.
Yeah.
You
know, but I know this game.
Hold it up.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I got the intrusive thought as a kid to just like, oh, what if I sucked in as hard as I could? And the answer is it pinches and bruises you in like a triangle formation around your mouth. So you look like a cult member.
Oh.
So that was a moment I had not thought about in a long time, but was brought back to me this afternoon.
When you did that, did you try to play it off? Like, did you make a story out about it to try and impress people, or did you cop to what it was?
It was so, obvious that no one bothered to ask. Like, everyone, you know, pitied me.
I pitied the fool.
Yes. Yeah, it was just like, we're not going to acknowledge it, and you're not going to tell us about it. We're just going to pretend that never happened, because otherwise we have to acknowledge that someone can be that dumb.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Well, you're not alone. I did that at one point, too. Yeah. So,
in case you're wondering how my family handled conflict, that was about it.
Yeah,
it's pity.
Just pity and refusal to acknowledge.
Yeah. It's unsure what would have hurt worse. Yeah. Calling it out or just letting it go unspoken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I sat through Rocky Horror Picture Show with them, and that was awkward, too.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I don't have too much. I'm in this, Ben, you're in a similar position, but I like this whole birthday corridor, that's going on, where I've got, it's myself and three other family members. So I'll have a birthday roughly within a week of each other. So like, you know, two big birthday things this weekend. One was a combined thing. Like my niece turned 18, which is wild. Yeah.
Holy crap.
You know, so then there's a bunch of that. And also I just, any birthday celebration that happens first, I just throw mine on because I don't want anybody doing anything, you know? So fair. I throw mine in there. Yeah. But yeah, whole birthday corridor. I was going to, do this though, because I talked about a ginger ale that I had last week. I got one this week too. I was at a store and I saw, for the first time in a while, Jamaica's Finest hot, hot, hot ginger beer.
You're cheating on Ale 81?
I grabbed it because it's it's hot, hot, hot. Yeah.
Am I the only one that calls it just Ale 8?
No, I call it Ale 81.
I've always omitted the one.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah, same. I'm just reflecting the way I heard Cole describe it.
Yes.
In case this is a variant that I have not experienced.
No, it's just ale. I've heard it referred to as both. I might be the odd one out, possibly. But yeah, this is an extra spicy ginger beer.
Mm. Nice.
Mm-hmm. Which is
you
disappointing.
Have the metal drums for the hot, hot, hot.
No. It's disappointing because I wish it was spicier. You can still taste other things in it, but oh well.
Man, I tell you what, they really bury the one on this logo for Ale 8. Like you would be very much forgiven for thinking it was a comma.
Yes, it is very tiny. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, so that's all I got for you is birthdays and ginger ale. Yeah, I think we got to talk about games. I think that that makes sense to me. So we've got to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about what we've been playing over the past period of time or so. This is a momentous week. This is the first week in forever that nobody talked about a game of any kind during the pre-roll banter.
A board game?
Yeah, what? Yeah. The first time in a very long time, and I wanted to mark that.
We're getting rusty.
Damn.
Yeah, at no point when somebody was talking did I glower.
Milo was playing games with me.
It doesn't count. Doesn't count.
I'm playing board games tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah, we're not in that section anymore, are we?
Damn.
Yeah.
Combo breaker.
David, what have you been playing since you last came in?
Well, appropriately enough, to just like the pre-roll, absolutely nothing.
Oh, wow.
My gaming laptop is out of commission.
Oh, no.
And so until I can buy a Steam Deck on Steam sale.
Right.
Yeah, I am just whatever. So
you're gonna get on that OLED tip.
Yep. If anyone has any suggestions on Mac games, you know, I guess I could do that. But
yeah. Oh, you can search around it. The trouble is finding one that is compatible with the most recent Mac OS.
Yeah. So that's actually the I was going to get back and play Children of Morta,
right?
The most recent Mac OS. Only supports Bluetooth gamepad, Xbox gamepads, not wired ones.
Oh yeah, because it's all the whatever cables now.
That is some bullshit, huh?
Yeah. So, and you were thinking about using like xCloud streaming?
No. Like Children of Morta is just straight up supports.
Okay.
Mac. Yeah.
Well, you'll have the same trouble if you're trying to connect a. If you can't connect a controller, but if you have xCloud, you can just use a browser.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. It runs remotely and streams to you, and then it just depends on the quality of your internet.
Huh. I mean, well, I do have fiber internet, so.
Oh yeah, you're more than fine. What happened to your gaming laptop?
So I need to replace the fan.
Okay.
So I ordered in a fan and actually got it today. So,
oh, okay, yeah, but then now you've got to take apart a modern gaming laptop in order to replace that bit. Yeah,
right. And I've got 7 days until Steam sale, so
right.
I might just say screw it and like wait for.
Yeah. Now, for the audience, I'm not asking this. Computers need fans.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Unrelated.
Fans turn out to be important. If the computer gets too hot, the demons can escape.
It's in the runes. It's traced on the chips themselves. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I was disappointed that I don't know what I thought, but like the last two computers that I have, the current one and then the previous one, I did liquid CPU cooling. And I was real bummed out to find out that there is still a fan in liquid CPU cooling. I don't know where I thought the heat went. I don't know what I thought they did with it, but I pulled it out. I was like, wait a minute, there's a fucking fan on this. So
I do know, I knew someone who the way his computer worked is instead of a case, he just had a fish tank that he filled with like mineral oil or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just had a pump, so that might not need a fan.
They do that in server farms sometime.
Really?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. Seems like it'd be I don't know that I would want to have 10 gallons of mineral oil just sitting on a desk.
Yeah, I think he said his entire, like, computer weighed, like, 300 pounds.
Oh, man, imagine it would stink, too. Yeah.
Huh. For the love of the game, I guess.
For the love of the game.
I mean, for the right kind of nerd, it already stinks down there. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. He was a gamer, didn't do like video or audio processing. He just was super into building like really overpowered computers.
Hey, takes all kinds. Huh. Well, I'm sorry you haven't got anything, but we will march on bravely. Who's got something new?
I've got something new that I've been playing.
Okay.
But it is not necessarily a new game.
That's good enough.
Sounds like you're still winning this episode.
just putting out feelers for how slacking off everyone else has been.
Yeah.
But I realized today that RoboQuest, which I played in Early Access, had its 1.0 release earlier this month.
RoboQuest.
So it is like an arena FPS roguelite where you all play as robots, which in a almost damning decision they choose to call Brobots.
Oh God, man!
It's a co-op. You can play it co-op. Whatever.
Yeah, that's the brown. That's the brown M&M in the bowl. You have to check every line now. You've got to. Yes. Yeah.
That I don't know how that one snuck through because the game itself is delightful.
Yeah,
absolutely love it. It's the kind of fast paced, bouncy, momentum based AFPS that you would expect. If I compared it to Doom or Quake or what have you, so really has the arena shooter feel, and you know you're a robot fighting through these different areas, just trying to clear as many enemies as fast as possible to get to the other side. One of the many big things that came with the 1.0 release was actual story though. So when I played in Early Access, it was just kind of biomes that were there. It was like a desert and then an oasis and then you're in a city and then like, you know, there was no context for it. Now they've actually got some kind of lo-fi cutscenes and little story pickups and context for each area that you go to.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, just a fun little extra that the game behind it is still what you're there for mostly, but it is additive to have a little bit of motivation there or story to discover.
Can you remind me what's like the core gameplay of this? Is it like multiplayer or?
You can play it co-op. And I think Moneysmith and I played co-op, right?
Yep. Yep. We did.
Yeah. We played some of it co-op. But it's almost got like a Borderlands feel to the type of guns you get.
Mm-hmm.
But still very much that Doom or Quake mechanics. So faster, snappier, you know, standing still means death.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always on offense as you play. The big thing that supports that is most enemies, when you kill them, will kind of drop a little shower of health orbs that disappear fairly quickly. So unless you are in the mix or at least exposed for a little bit of time as you swoop through, you won't be able to get those. So that's kind of the vibe. There's a ton of different weapons. Whereas before you could only get them from weapon crates, it would be kind of at the start of, and the end of every section. Now, enemies can just drop a random weapon, which I haven't really found one that they drop to be very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's just like, man, I really like the scout rifle. Like that is OP. So I see that
preference
on the floor
based decision.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it does feel like there's kind of a set of right weapons for this game. Because of the mechanics of it, any kind of hit scan, weapon with high damage, is great. So sniper rifles, scout rifles, revolvers, the hand cannons, all of that is the kind of stuff that I trend towards. Because you're kind of snapping off quick shots while you're bouncing around, and you're never using the scope on anything. It's just always at the regular view. I don't know what to call that. Even with sniper rifles, like zooming in with a sniper rifle just takes too long. You have to stand too still.
Yeah.
You got pinpoint accuracy on that first shot anyway.
Mm.
So those are the kind of weapons I trend towards. There's a bunch of stuff, and it feels like they've added a couple weapon variants where it's like slower moving projectiles or projectiles that bounce or, you know, really kind of creative, crazy stuff. But it all just feels like that's for a game that feels like Borderlands, not for a game that feels like this. Not because it's wrong tonally, but because that type of weapon just feels underpowered compared to hit scan, high damage weapons.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not a complaint, by the way, the game is a ton of fun to play. It feels great, et cetera. And I will say there's now a system in the game again with the 1.0 release where, if you use a weapon enough, you kind of get a little card, that has you have collected it or whatever, and you kind of get that entry in your codex, if you will. Enemies will drop that as well if you kill enough of them, and so there's kind of this incentive to use all the weapons just if you want to fill in all the pips.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
In the same vein, there there's pickups that you use to unlock passive upgrades that stick with you. There are, I think when we played last, there were three characters. Now there are five, and I don't know what the two new ones are. So that's exciting.
Are the characters mechanically different from each other, or is it just skins?
No, they are. They are mechanically different. So of the two I've got right now, there's one that just has an invincibility shield you can activate for a very limited amount of time. And so you can kind of just be safe for a little bit. Usually I use that to swoop in and grab all the health orbs. And then their melee attack is just kind of a random, a regular swipe. Then the other one I've unlocked so far this playthrough is a commando that they're, instead of having invincibility, they have a little rocket, a homing rocket they can fire. And their melee attack, quote unquote melee, is a little mini shotgun. So it's got a little bit more range on it, but the damage falls off pretty quick. There's a whole like fury system that they operate on. So the more kills you get and the faster you get them, the kind of more incremental damage and speed your character will have. I know there's one that's the third one that I have actually played that I haven't unlocked yet this time around is an engineer that they're special or whatever is they can deploy a little drone that kind of fights alongside you.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So there's lots of different flavors. And each one has an upgrade tree and different stuff you can find as you're doing a run that powers them up. And so the kind of interplay between, hey, what upgrades have I found for my robot? I refuse to call it the other thing.
Yep.
And what, what weapons have I found, elemental damage types, et cetera. How can I combine those together to get something that will kind of break the run and get me through to the end?
Do you have any control over like the item pool? Like, are you unlocking items like in a run that are then added to the pool, or is it just you get what you get?
Yeah, so it tracks which items for a given robot you've seen, but I don't know if you're specifically unlocking them. And it'll call out when one is new if you're like looking at options from a weapon crate or what have you. So I don't know if it's a fixed pool that you're seeing more of organically, or if there's something behind the scenes adding.
Yeah.
Another big facelift the game has gotten is to the kind of between runs area, just made it a lot more navigable and clear. And with that, you can now see, kind of the list of items for each robot and then what of those you've seen. So some will just be question marks. Some of them will be gray because you saw it, but you didn't take it. And then the ones that you've taken or have found the card for have full entries. But yeah, it's a delightful little game, and highly recommend people check it out. It's on Game Pass, and I think it's on Steam and consoles as well. But
this you said this wasn't new. This like literally just hit 1.0 last week. Yeah,
I guess it not new to me because I played it in early access however long ago.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But yeah. That's the other thing. So rarely do I notice technical improvements, but the loading screens in the 1.0 release take easily a third of the time as they did in the early access version. So they did some kind of streamlining behind the scenes that it just like, that was one of the first things I noticed. It's like, I used to have to stare at this picture for a lot longer than that to get playing. That's awesome. So
cool. Yeah.
That's RoboQuest.
Looks neat.
Mm-hmm.
Arena shooters are good.
Oh, they are so good. And I keep on hearing people be like, we need something to bring back the genre, or like, it needs to be returned to its heights.
What are you talking about? There's so many.
Yes.
Like, exactly. Fire up Ultra Kill. Like, come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like so many things. It's just more fragmented and disseminated now. There's still great stuff being made. You're just not going to get the one cultural focal point that you would get when that's the way games were released.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's RoboQuest. I have also continued playing Sea of Stars.
Okay, yeah. So you got more of this under your belt this time?
More of it under my belt, seen more of the mechanics. And it's just, yeah, everything that this game adds to the combat system is just such a fun little twist to what I'm used to in JRPGs. So they do a great job of, you know, it still feels like a JRPG to play, but the combat has just enough little interesting choices and twists. Specifically, I think the system I'm interacting with now that I hadn't seen yet the last time I talked about it was now standard attacks. They regenerate your magic points first off. So like they have a function in the game, but they also generate these little like droplets of energy that you can then any character that attacks, you can boost the attack with these energy droplets. And so managing your attacks that way, and you know, if you use the sun character, then their attacks gain the sun property. Even their non-magical typically attacks become sun attacks. Same with the moon character. And then there's another non-magical character that I've found that actually gets like magical damage if they use the droplets.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I mentioned last time, when your enemies kind of queue up to attack, they'll sometimes have a set of modifiers above their head. So it might be there's physical damage types, so bludgeoning or slashing, but then there's also elemental, so the sun or the moon. And if you can hit them with each type listed, the number of times listed before they attack you, it'll interrupt their attack. And so that combined with this new like energy droplet system is really, really interesting. Because every turn you're thinking through, okay, I can generate droplets with this character and then use them on this character. This character I can use a skill that has this energy type, et cetera. So it's a lot more kind of putting together a little puzzle every turn than I've seen in other JRPGs.
I mean, it feels like an evolution of the, the elemental field system from Chrono Cross.
A little bit. I haven't played it, so I don't have it as a reference, but I'd believe that this has strong inspired by traditional JRPG vibes.
Yeah. It wasn't like each enemy had a particular, or each encounter had like a particular number of categories that you needed to meet, criteria to meet. It was more that you could build your party in such a way where every there's no such thing as just like a standard attack, but like every special thing that you did, you were it changed the field. So if you did three red attacks in a row, suddenly red elemental things would do a lot more damage. Kind of manipulate the field that way, and also like, you know, deny the enemy a unified field for things that they for things that would advantage them, things like that.
Yeah, so it's got shades of that kind of elemental management. It's got shades of the Mario RPG like real-time interaction.
It's just
fun to play, and I'm getting invested in the story kind of epic stuff that they're doing. They do a great job of laying out the like, oh, you know, I'm realizing that all these places and things and items of legend that they kind of mentioned in passing early on,
yeah,
like I'm now going to be led through discovering all of those. Mm-hmm. That's the type of experience we're doing is,
yeah,
you know, protagonist gets to see all the wonders of their childhood dreams,
yeah,
in the flesh.
Has it continued to be as talky as the intro was?
Still pretty talky.
Okay.
I've definitely kind of gone into like a dungeon area where it's like, okay, this is, you know, you're not just going to do traversal puzzles and battles for a while. But even within that, there's a bunch of interesting characters and dialogue. So it's fairly talky still. That is not a bad thing at all.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because it's funny. So, you know, you're hearing about all these things and then you're going and experiencing them. And they do a great job of, you know, every time you experience something that you've been told about or heard about on the micro scale and the macro scale, there's some twist. Like it's not directly what was described. There's, you know, a super, super powerful wizard, but it's actually just a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the brave hero actually, you know, was just trying to get away from the crowds and ran towards the danger accidentally instead of away from it.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff, which is fun. Mm-hmm. So Very colorful world. It continues to be beautiful to look at. Soundtrack, as we discussed, is excellent. Mm-hmm. And continuing to enjoy it on my Steam Deck.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sea of Stars.
Yes, indeed.
Cool.
That's what I've been playing this week.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
I just got one this week. I've continued playing Alan Wake 2. So I've progressed a little bit farther in it. I'm beyond the point where you kind of pick which character you want to play as.
Yeah.
I've tackled another boss battle. It continued to be very annoying.
Oh, yeah.
Where you have to kind of cheese it. You get to the point where you run out of ammo and you run in circles until you die. Mm-hmm. But I was able to cheese it by like throwing an explosive at a point where two of the bosses spawn and then shoot that and kill them both. So that was nice. Yeah. But, it's still a very beautiful game. The combat outside of the boss battles is better still, but it does get annoying.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does give you the option where you can just run away from the people or like run past them and you can kind of make that work. Mm-hmm. So I am at least appreciative that it's that forgiving, I guess. But yeah, definitely the strong point of the game is the setting, the environments, the look of everything. The story is still good. A bit I was kind of confused by is, so I progressed with Saga's story, since that was like the part that I cared about more. But after playing a mission or two of that, I'm not sure whether I missed an Alan Wake story or not. And so that's something that I need to like look into off air, I guess.
Yeah.
That's the worst feeling.
Yeah.
Like, feel like the more I play this right now, I feel like I'm getting further away from a point that I'm going to have to return to.
So to give you a little bit of reassurance on that,
mm-hmm.
You are not playing, like when you jump to Alan Wake, you are not playing Alan Wake in the present.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting.
Okay. That's not so much a spoiler as it is like it says like, hey, you're shifting realities when you do this. So it's not like you're locking yourself out of Alan stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not that I would 100% mind, but you know, no. Anyway, but yeah, so that part was interesting because I thought they would be largely, I guess, independent of one another and kind of like walk past one another.
Yeah.
It still seems like a very well polished game. I feel like if you liked Control, you would like Alan Wake 2. I think the game is closer to that than it is the original Alan Wake, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Did you get to the scene? Did you do the sequence like the big one everybody is losing their mind about?
I might not have then.
Okay. It's an Alan one. So if you haven't progressed that very far, you'll know it when you get to it. It's like the big standout one. And I will not talk about it because, because I do not want to, if you are going to enjoy it, I do not want to sour you on it.
I appreciate that.
Snitches get stitches.
No.
But yeah, I don't know if I have too much more to say outside of like what I've talked about in the past few weeks. Still is a pretty enjoyable experience. There are a few bumps with things like the boss fights and stuff like that. But otherwise I think it's a pretty enjoyable experience and the story is genuinely interesting.
Yeah. People said the boss fights would get better, but I got to that second one with Saga and it was sorely disappointed. It was not like a straight up wall. But it was still a frustrating encounter design. Is it the one where they keep coming back until you go and find all the nodes? And
Yep. And it's like there's no ammo. Like you literally go around and it's like there's nothing I can do to fix the situation.
Yeah.
Which is like such a bad state for your game to get to for a player.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, no, that's one of the ones that I've been playing. I think I'm only a little bit further than where you are, despite by dint of having played more of the Alan stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was gonna say we could transition over to you because that's all I got this week.
Okay.
But Yeah, how have you been playing the game?
Oh yeah, no, I've just been like, I'll complete a chapter with one of them and then switch over to another. I got to the point where that you're talking about where it seems like it will forestall an Alan section for a while. contingent upon new arrivals, let's say.
Yeah.
I got to like the section, the big standout scene.
Okay.
And people in the chat, because I was playing this, you know, streaming for everybody, they were either losing their shit or they were like, oh my god, I love this, and I was not giving them the reaction that they wanted. It's in line with other like standout scenes that Remedy has done in some of their games, specifically Control and then the first Alan Wake. It just it didn't work for me like it did in those. And that's all I'm going to go. Yeah. Yeah. Like the since it has opened up, it has been hitting better for me.
Gotcha.
Which is nice. You know, it just that opening, man, that opening is so dire.
Yeah. So we can talk about like maybe vaguely the watery map. Did you enjoy that section of the game with Saga?
Yeah, there was a little bit too much backtracking for me in that one. And kind of the same problem that I had in the woods map.
Yeah,
where it was like, okay, I was definitely already here, and I probably should have been able to grab the thing they wanted me to grab, but I had to go to it at the properly scripted point.
I missed the sheet of paper that tells you like where the four things are too. That was annoying. And then the other part, I don't think this is a spoiler. I don't think I'm going to care about this. The fact that one of the things you need is a mask, and there's like two deer masks chilling in the safe room right next to it. Yep. I'm like, just grab that. Why doesn't this work? Mm-hmm. So anyway, mine are great.
Is the mind place? God, I hate calling it the mind place. That's dumb. They can just call it a mind palace.
Is it too close to mind freak? Is that why you don't like it?
No, it just sounds dumb and bad to me to call it mind place. which is not very eloquent of me, but you know, here we are. So the mind place, like case reconstruction, you're finding the evidence and you're putting it up on the board. Are you doing that and keeping up with it? And is that providing you with any useful information? Or are you like me and you're blowing past all of these, you know, just like, okay, well, I can keep all of this in my head. And then suddenly you get past a certain point and then it says like, automatically allocated. Like where is that landing for you? Cause I find the system to be like, I don't know, aesthetically in line, but is just woefully not necessary for the kind of puzzles they have you doing.
Yeah, it's like it's a cool system that they never actually utilize, because I do like place everything in places, but again, there's like no real mental challenge because you can just trial and error it if you really like. If you want to turn your mind off or whatever and engage with it. But you're never really rewarded by like completing these sorts of puzzles though. I do like, you know, at a certain point the map will reveal like where areas of interest will be and like where you can find more clues and stuff, and so I do make an effort to try and get all the clues that I can. The fact that you're not really, it doesn't really impact the game that much is a little annoying, but that said, there are certain cases that it still seems like to be determined where like perhaps some of them will give you the answer. In one case in particular, the puzzle for the keypad in the main section of the watery, without revealing what the location is, with that one, it's like you get four clues, but it still doesn't let you know how to solve the puzzle necessarily. And so that was something where it's like, well, that's a bummer, because it's like, that would be a great place where it's like, oh, you know, if you looked around for all the clues and you might not know how to solve the puzzle, it could give it to you through that menu. But yeah, I think it would be better utilized if they did things like that in it.
The one place where I've seen that it is kind of like worthwhile is just kind of like the game spanning case, which is like how much of this is real and how much of it is the story. Just where kind of stray evidence comes, and you know, that to me is more like, okay, so I can see that being used as like a recap of things that I've seen so far to help me at the very least keep characters and the relationship straight.
Yeah. But
like in terms of actually quote unquote solving a case, it's kind of just a menu tax a little bit. You know, you get the you get the notification like, hey, you have evidence, and then you go in and then slowly move it around and put it where it needs to go.
Yeah, it does feel kind of like a to-do list, but I'm not necessarily saying that in a bad way, because I do have some sort of enjoyment out of like kind of putting everything in its right place. So
But yeah, no, the shooting is fine, and there have been some, you know, some pretty good puzzles, you know. So there is at least that. It is wild to me. I don't care about Game of the Year nods, but like the fact that this is nominated is like just a real style over substance kind of thing to me a little bit.
Okay.
You know, maybe it's because it's such a strong year for so many of the other entries that are for so much other stuff that came through. This is just it's hitting me as a real kind of B minus kind of thing.
Oh, I got you. See, I would put it like maybe like A minus, where it's like because the production level's so high and it's like such a pretty game, like I can see it just being Game of the Year just because of that alone.
Yeah.
But to your point of it being style over substance, but I would not put this like above something like Baldur's Gate 3 or something like that by any means, though.
I'd like, so far I wouldn't put this, like if we're talking style over substance, like fucking Spider-Man 2, you know?
Yeah, that's an interesting comparison, because like I think I would put it above Spider-Man 2 just because it's so far advanced since Alan Wake 1 that it feels more like a sequel to Control than it does Alan Wake, I guess, because of that.
Yeah, because
it plays so much closer.
Yeah, and they tie the universe and stuff together.
Yeah. But I would say that maybe Spider-Man's, I don't know. I think the two are very close.
Yeah.
But I would not put either of them as like Game of the Year, probably.
No. I mean, Baldur's Gate 3 on a walk. But
yeah, and like Zelda, for example.
If that doesn't win, then
if that doesn't win, I will think less of the Game Awards. Oops, that's not possible.
Well, like, I want to shout out, like, something like Zelda, for example, even though that's a sequel, that's so much more creative, and it did so much more elaboration beyond the first game than either of these other sequels that we're talking about do. And so, like, I could see that being Game of the Year. And even if I don't agree with that, I would respect that decision over, like, either of these two, for example.
Yep. So I'm excited to see where the story's going and stuff. And you know, obviously getting to see more fucked up horror things is good.
How do you feel about the jump scares in the game?
I don't like it. It's really cheap. It's real like, I don't know. It's like sub fear level jump scare kind of thing. Where just sometimes you're just walking and then there's like a JPEG overlay and a scream. It feels a little you're watching a kid's animated movie and you realize like all of the jokes are added in ADR spoken by by somebody who's not on the screen, and it's like, oh, they brought in some comedians just to like say stuff to keep the energy level up, because what was actually happening wasn't good enough.
I agree, but I will say it is an effective jump scare because of how hard the cut is and how quick it is. So I do respect it a little bit for that, but yeah, I agree that it is a little bit cheap.
If you're operating at the same level as a Newgrounds Screamer video from 2002, then I've got to look askance at you. You probably could have integrated this a little bit better. So I had Alan Wake 2. Is there any more about Alan Wake that anybody has questions about?
I think we're good.
Okay. The other thing is continuing to play Power Wash Simulator VR.
Good man.
The real meat and potatoes of the week.
Yeah. And I don't know that I have a lot more to say on top of that, like getting into the more difficult and time consuming jobs, you know. So like I had to listen to like Venture Brothers commentaries because of the strike ending, which hooray for that. We're going to be talking about the Venture Brothers movie. And so there's several commentaries on that disc. Need to listen to those. So I'm like, well, just play that and listen to the guys talk while I'm doing this. So like cleaning up an entire skate park and stuff, you know, while I'm listening to it, or cleaning the house that's shaped like a shoe.
yeah. So does successfully simulate a power washer?
Oh, I mean, I can quibble with the facts that, like, okay, it's not necessarily making you take runoff into consideration. So, like, there is not the the actual thing that you would need to do, which is wash from top to bottom. You know, so you don't recontaminate or resoil things that you had already cleaned. And you know, you're not the annoying thing about power washers is you've got to, and, you know, for me, I have an electric one. Regardless, you know, you have the hose, repositioning the thing is a real pain in the ass. And in power wash simulator, there is none of that. You know, there's no like, okay, I need to like hook it up over here and reach everything that I can, you know. So in terms of simulation, that's where it falls down. But also nobody is asking for that. Everybody just wants the cleaning experience. So they have optimized for fun over realism, which is always the solution. Yeah. Talking about it being in VR, everything I said last time still holds true. Everything is a lot faster because this is a game about conceiving of 3D objects and looking at them from unexpected angles to hit, you know, to clean it thoroughly. Having it be tied to head tracking makes a ton of sense, you know, not needing to trial and error walk along the edge of a gutter in order to clean both the inside and the outside of it, like being able to just like, you know, go to the short nozzle and then like reach up and point down to clean it is pretty good, actually. yeah. So it continues to be neat. And my only real disappointment is that they don't have the extra DLC stuff. So no Final Fantasy VII, no SpongeBob, no Tomb Raider. I just closed down my yard and put all my patio furniture away and stuff. No more power washing for me this season, you know. In real life. did all of my final yard stuff until spring. So no power washing for me, but the game
all to VR. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Gotta continue to get my fix, as it were.
Of course.
Yeah. Any questions about Power Wash Simulator VR?
I don't think so.
Okay. So good.
So cool. I actually remembered. I don't have any games, but I did have some media I wanted to pitch to you. Have you ever read Bibliomania?
No, I haven't.
Have you heard of it?
No.
It's I would check out. I think you'd really like it. It's a manga that's kind of a a psychological / body horror retelling very vaguely of Alice in Wonderland.
Okay.
But yeah, saying too much about would kind of give away all of a lot of the premise. But basically, you know, Alice wakes up in a mansion made out of, I think it's like 431 rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And has to, travel through all of them to escape. However, each time she travels into a new room, she gets like more and more mutated.
Okay. Is this all available online? Is what I'm seeing kind of presented like a webcomic? So,
yes, exactly. It was originally a webcomic, fairly short. But yeah.
Is this
really
like
good.
Binding of Isaac, where every new room you're more mutated?
I mean, I guess, yeah, in a way. But yeah. Art style, just a little bit has some Junji Ito vibes. Less so, I know, less so in terms of like necessarily his like focus on facial characteristics, but more his weird thing of like, characters can either look like dolls or like Lovecraftian horrors with nothing in between.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, this is also hitting Junji Ito. I mean, this is more like just a body horror trope, but Ito dominates the space. But just like the horror of the plasticity of the body.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, you know, just stuff is stretching and places, things are going, you know, and then that shouldn't look like that.
Yeah, and also, can't really say much to spoil, but the story goes actually some interesting places.
Mm-hmm.
Something I thought I'd suggest.
Cool. Yeah, no, it looks good. It is going to be weird to look at something in a manga style that is read from left to right, as this one is.
Yeah. I'm interested to know what the deal is with that, because it does look a lot, even though, like I said, it does kind of have some Junji Ito vibes, it does look enough not like manga that... Mm-hmm. With it being left to right, I would assume it wasn't Japanese, but apparently the only physical release, at least, was in Japan.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, she's through the looking glass, so everything's reversed.
Okay, yeah.
I would actually not be surprised if that's what they're going for.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Well, it's got
your English paper writes itself now.
It's got the translated manga style where text bubbles are translated, but like the sound effect, onomatopoeias are not.
I actually find that super frustrating, honestly.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. It's they're important. The onomatopoeias are important for comics, actually.
Yeah. So I'm also reading Inside Mari.
Okay.
Which there's there's some of those that are super important.
Yeah.
Early on, implied that the main character might be a lesbian.
Okay.
And like the only way that's, until you get real late, that it's implied is just, significant use of the Doki Doki
onomatopoeia. The heartbeat, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, if I didn't know that, I would not have picked up on that foreshadowing.
Yeah, yeah, like this this thing that could only be subtext is actually text. I just cannot understand the text.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I see that as being especially important for horror, because, like, is this a squish-squish sneaking up on me, or is mm-hmm. this, like, a clicky-clack sneaking up on me?
Yeah.
Like, those are important distinctions.
It's also really inconsistent, too, like, which ones do, like, Chainsaw Man. I don't know if they just have a localization budget and they can afford to mess with the art, but, like that has translated. Onomatopoeias.
I wonder if in the anime I don't know if it's, was it MAPPA, I think, makes, or however it's pronounced, makes that, and like that they will translate even like incidental text.
Mm-hmm.
So like street signs and stuff, just things that are have no bearing whatsoever.
Well, I had never heard about this, and if it's short, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's a segment.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, not I this week. But Aaron suggested a question in the Slack, and I thought it was a great one. So thank you, Aaron. They ask, quality of life decisions in games are usually beneficial, but what is a quality of life decision that ultimately hindered the game? This could either be by general consensus or just by your personal enjoyment.
Yeah. I will get us started with Callum, who says, Ubisoft style display all the things maps. is good for collecting things, takes exploration out of the equation. I think it loses more than it gains.
Yeah.
I think Elden Ring had the best compromise on this, actually.
I remember I think it was the Assassin's Creed Odyssey had a mode that was explicitly characters would give you relative directions, so oh, it's east of the such and such and north of the whatever.
Oh, no.
They did it Morrowind style.
Yeah. And I feel like that, I guess what I'm saying is I wish that more developers would actively explore, like, how do we make things navigable while also having exploration still be a thing?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's probably good ways to do that.
Yeah, yeah. There are good compromises you can make. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Eric say?
Eric says, Pikmin's 4 auto-lock, auto-lock-on works well for singular enemies, but actively causes problems when dealing with crowds of enemies / items.
And there's a continuation in the reply there.
He says, letting us hold ZR for manually aiming would have been very useful.
Or hold ZR, and yeah, I've not played a Pikmin game. I don't know if it makes sense to use gyro controls, but if it's built in on the Switch, so let it happen.
Never use gyro controls.
Oh man, I'm a believer in gyro for vine aiming. It's so much more precise than sticks. Yeah, David, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, I don't think that any quality of life improvement is wrong. All of them should be there, from difficulty management to colorblind mode, etc. More options the better. You should always have the option to add or remove the options from a game. This would help a lot of people to remove stress and add enjoyment instead of frustration. That way, a lot more games could be played to the end. Yeah, I definitely agree here. A big one for me on this is when games make difficulty levels that incorporate or remove aspects of gameplay, not separate from difficulty levels that just make like enemies do more damage and stuff.
Yeah.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. No, I am largely in agreement, especially around things like related to accessibility, you know, colorblind, and I think that granular difficulty is generally always going to be better. See Infernax, right? Mm-hmm. I've got my own example. I've got one that I'm going to go hard in the paint for, and it is totally predictable if you have listened even just to last week. So.
Well, it might be. I'm thinking the spirit of the question was on kind of the non-optional things.
Yeah,
here I did this for you. Elements that you don't get control over. I love the thought that more control for the player always equals better than.
Yeah, I think Callum and Eric hit, but with both of their examples, hit it, which is like these things were implemented ostensibly for quality of life, but actually diminished something cool about the original for questionable games. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Let's see, Dennis, what does Greg say?
Greg says, not being allowed to change the difficulty setting on a game. Sometimes I've turned down or up a difficulty while playing a game to help with something, and more than once I've wished I could do that and had to struggle a lot to make it through.
Yeah,
especially because it's such a nebulous scale.
Yeah.
What does hard mean to you? I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, hard means it's for players with experience playing blah blah blah. Okay, how much?
Yeah.
Like,
make it make sense.
There are lots of different ways it can go. Yeah.
I always have to shout out, I think the greatest difficulty setting I've ever seen is Shadow of War, where they have two hardest difficulty settings. One is a conventional, just like you do hardly any damage and enemies do a lot and have lots of health. But then there's another one that's basically just like everything, both you and enemies do double damage, and both your special attacks and enemy special attacks charge twice as fast.
Oh, okay.
So it's a thing where basically as long as you are playing more intelligently than the AI, you just decimate them.
Mm-hmm.
But if for even a moment you're not, they can take you out.
The tables can turn real quick.
That's like a Slay the Spire modifier.
Now, Last one here is Rookie, who says fast travel in Souls-likes is ultimately a detriment to whichever game included it. It lets the developers get away with subpar level design because you'll only have to traverse the area once. Even Dark Souls has a large drop in level quality in the second half after you unlock fast travel. Yeah, I think this is a like a chicken egg cart horse kind of thing, because like, I don't know. There are a lot of levels in 3 and some in 2 where like, no, you just, if you're going to give me that level, I'd like to have fast travel around that. But it does make the world feel small.
Well, I feel like it's also like, maybe you shouldn't have given me that level.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, like if I can't get Lordran every time, then yeah. I would
like to point out that, the Bloodborne technically does not have any fast travel and is the greatest Soulsborne game.
I mean, it does. So we're getting into technical here. Like
the best kind of not fast travel.
you still have the graveyard warp where, you know, you can, you know, enter the Hunter's Dream at a lamp and then go to any other lamp you've rested at, which is basically the same thing as fast travel to mine. It's just a one extra step.
I had the same answer as Rookie, but I had a little bit of a different take on it, where it's in general, the trade-off with fast travel is you're breaking kind of the immersion of the levels that you're walking through. Yeah. And I thought that was the strength of Dark Souls, at least the first half of Dark Souls. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with them adding fast travel, 'cause that was very welcome at that point in the game. Because you had already gotten the immersion at that point, and you've kind of like trudged through the environment like back and forth and like made all the connections. So at that point, I think it's totally valid to give you fast travel and allow you to like speedily go through, since you've already experienced it up to that point.
Yeah. I don't know that the drop off in level quality after the Lord Vessel is necessarily tied to the presence of fast travel around
Yeah, it could be that, or it could be like the fact that those are the things that they were working on last and just didn't have enough time to finish them. So,
Yeah, I mean, none of those spokes that you go to after Anor Londo are designed to be gone through in multiple directions, which I think is one of the main strengths of everything up to that point. I don't know, David. How about you? I mean, do you have an answer? Or are you sticking with quality of life is always good?
Ah, man. I don't know if this counts, but I would say the more recent, by which I mean 3 and 4, Diablo 3 and 4, dumbing down the skill system, I think is very, very much a weakness. Just in particular, I think Diablo 3, you know, they... we're all about like, oh, we don't want you to spend, 20 points in the same skill over and over again, because that's, you know, that's just boring. But the problem is that then made it impossible to differentiate between I want to have this skill versus I want to have, you know, 20 points of my build committed to this skill.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually made a lot less ability to express yourself in your builds, for lack of a better way to say it.
Yeah. It's got to be something between Dead Simple and Paths of Exile. You know, there's probably a compromise there. Yeah. Is Path of, am I thinking of the right one? Path of Exile, is that the crazy skill
yeah,
tree?
Yeah, that's the really one. I was gonna shout out, but this poor Diablo, like, I want to shout it out because it is a good in-between, and I've already forgotten the name of it.
Uh-oh.
So hold on.
Yeah.
Path of Exile?
Not Path of Exile. It is... played it for multiple timelines. It's in early access, technically. I'll just shout it out when I find it on my list of Steam games.
Journey Quest, Rise of the Ascent.
Yeah. It's some mental Teflon name like that.
Yeah. Let's see. I mean, mine, like I said, you can predict it. EverQuest and MMOs generally being a little bit undone by being built around fast travel or having fast travel kind of added to them. Just keeping it on the fast travel theme. EverQuest just freeze it in 2001 before Planes of Power, where to do any kind of warping, you needed to rely on a wizard or a druid, and all of them, like, and both of those classes had separate, like separate networks of places they could go. You know, make the players rely on each other more. Make it if you're going to cover distance manually, you've got to wait for the boat. Because that, you know, things can happen on that boat. You know, it goes through a zone, right? I am alone. I think I am alone in the desire for that. So
yeah, I kind of agree with you. You know, EverQuest had a sense of scale in their game that I've not seen in anything else.
And just like how much effort it took and how just out to sea you felt when you like made the run from Kinos to Freeport or vice mm-hmm. versa, just running across that main continent. Like, come on. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just literally just repeating things that I said last week. So I will break out of that.
To bail you out of it, I found it. Last epoch.
Okay. Yeah, that's that. The nonsense.
Yeah, whatever that means. It is a Diablo-like that has a just right Goldilocks skill system.
See, I really like the skill system in Path of Exile. In particular, I loved the skill that made it so your attacks could never miss, but they also could never crit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you? I mean, the quality of life that you think went too far?
Yeah, I have to imagine it's in the game because it's a quality of life attempt. But Destiny in particular... but any game that forces you to hold down the button to make a menu choice, just infuriates me.
You're railing at a decade and a half old thing. I was initially really put off by that. I like it now.
Oh, I hate it so much. Particularly when I'm playing on mouse and keyboard, do not make me hold the left mouse button down to make a selection. I get the intent of like, well, you don't want to accidentally click on something, mm-hmm. but when the penalty for clicking for misclicking is a half a second to go back, don't impose a mandatory half second penalty every time for something that could potentially cost me a half second.
It also needs to be deployed judiciously. Go ahead, David.
I was going to say also in any of those games, you know that the, command for sitting down in a chair is going to be a single click.
Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah.
God. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I want to be able to do that at the drop of a hat. Yeah. Huh. Well, thanks folks for participating. If you would like to participate, you can go to the Duck Feet community group on Facebook and watch the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. And thank you, Dennis, for posting this.
Happy to.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Since we alluded to a little bit of this earlier, Dennis, what's happening with Jeff Keighley's Why Are We Bothering with the Game Awards?
I'm more interested in Starfield getting snubbed than I am about excited for the Game Awards, but yeah. I just thought it was very interesting that we saw recently Starfield did not get the Game of the Year nod at the awards, which to the Alan Wake 2 nomination, like I would put Starfield absolutely in the same category as Alan Wake 2. It's just like, I don't like, you know, I'm sure there are some people somewhere excited for this, but it is mm-hmm. not me and it's not anyone I interact with. So why does it seem to be so monolithic? Alan Wake 2 squeaked through. They paid the right people, I guess. Mm-hmm. Whereas Starfield did not make the list for Game of the Year. I think it still showed up on the RPG of the Year list or something like that.
Yeah.
It's interesting that these awards have gotten serious enough that we're having snub gossip.
Yeah.
In a way I haven't seen before.
I mean, in fairness, Starfield not rating like the top category, that to me seems like a sign that there is a process, you know, somehow working, you know, like the fact, you know, just the fact that it's a big, you know, a big studio. Alan Wake 2 makes sense as like an Oscar bait kind of thing.
Sure. The one that seems really weird to me is Spider-Man 2.
Oh yeah.
Just cause like, yeah, that was, I haven't played it, but apparently a good game, but I haven't heard anything about it that was like advanced games or, you know, particularly a touch point in, you know, in culture or anything like that.
You know, so Sony's Stray won indie game of the year last year, which struck me as so weird. And this has the same smell to it.
Yeah.
Wait, which one?
The one that David just mentioned. Just like
Spider-Man 2?
Spider-Man 2, yeah. Like a Sony-sponsored, you know, game.
I mean, I would disagree with that. Like, Spider-Man 2, I think, is it's as if playing Spider-Man 1 for, like, fresh for another go.
Yeah, but I feel like that's, to me, I'm sorry I cut you off.
No. I know what you're saying, where it's like that isn't a step beyond and that's not innovating. So I could see that being a strike against it. And I think I made this comparison when I first played it, where I had a problem with the God of War 2 because of that same reason, where like it didn't feel like they innovated at all over the first game. I don't have that problem with Spider-Man 2, though. Like, I still enjoy playing it. I think it's just the core gameplay is just more fun in that game.
That's the thing. I can see it getting big nods just because it's really fun to play. But then you get into like, okay, what if we're giving the game awards any heft in
clout,
this? Like what
we drew him into the conversation anyway. Yeah. Good job, guys.
What would this winning say about you know, games as they exist in, you know, 2023 or whatever?
So I saw Moon was discussing this, and his take was the game of the year should be whatever game the industry is most going to learn the wrong lessons from.
Oh yeah, yeah. and in that case, it's going to be Baldur's Gate.
Oh yeah, but,
yeah. We need it hornier.
Well, in that case, it should be Starfield, which is that procedural generation is dead, guys.
Oh God. And special special places in hell. Destiny 2 getting getting nominated for best community sport mere days after their entire community team was let go.
So what is community support? Like
I don't know what that like what that category is specifically. Like I haven't read
especially
that.
Especially with like Baldur's Gate 3, does this just mean porn?
Like that category has like Final Fantasy 16 nominated for it, and like that does not have online. There's like what are you doing? Like when I think of community support, I think of like community team, like actual people
like,
who
hey, the devs are responsive to the community. They support the community, not the community supports this game.
Yeah, it's weird. Let's see. Related to that, Ben, what are we probably going to see on the night of that event, or at least at some point in early December?
So this was announced in the last week that Rockstar is going to release information about GTA 6 in December. I think most people are speculating that they're going to give it like a release date and maybe show a preview of it, that sort of thing. This is after leaks from last year where we kind of saw that it's already going to take place in Miami and yeah, it's probably going to be in the same vein as Vice City, but it's taking place in present day. I think they have released a synopsis for it where it's like a Bonnie and Clyde-esque story. I believe that is public information, not leaked information. But yeah, so this is exciting because everyone kind of knew it was coming. And from the leaks, we knew it was in a pretty advanced state. I guess the part that hit me sideways was that this game's been in development for 9 going on 10 years now. Which is pretty wild. So that just by itself.
What do you think to the you know, what is hard difficulty? What does in development mean?
I don't know, like devs actively working on it. Yeah. And I understand if it's a bigger company, you can just have like a few, you haven't like spun up people, like a whole, you know, like
yeah.
groups of people to work on it. And it could technically be in development for a long amount of time, but it also tracks too, cause it's like, that's when the last GTA came out. So I imagine some amount of the teams were still working on this and not like pulled off on like Red Dead 2 or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a project this size would go through like pre-production, a lengthy pre-production, and then you start bringing in tons of just throw in bodies at this thing. The game's gonna the final price tag for the game's development is gonna be almost $1 billion, people are saying, which is untenable.
Yeah. I feel like the GTA series though has just aged like warm milk.
Yeah. I mean, having recently done Grand Theft Auto 5, like the play on that is super good, but like, I don't know, Rockstar's like aesthetic nobody can actually be good or believe anything kind of thing is just not the South Park of it all is kind of overbearing at this point.
Yep. Yeah. Anarchists, man, we don't believe in anything.
They decided to make like a simulator and then, but they still kept fun parts in their game. So it's
you do cool shit. Also, I need to correct you. Not because you got the line wrong. It's nihilists who don't believe anything.
God damn
anarchists.
It.
Our anarchists do believe things is the thing. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. That's good.
The speculation I've heard that I think is interesting is what are they going to do with GTA online?
Has to be a huge part of what they're doing. Like that needs to be the primary driver of making the money back on this.
Yeah.
Am I the only one that got into GTA online?
Yeah. You've talked about it quite a bit
on the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Plenty of people get into GTA.
Well, okay. I mean on the show.
Yeah. You're the only one of us who has done it. I meant to do a little bit of it for the WAF about GTA 5, just didn't work out because time and all that. Yeah, I don't know. I'll get this thing. I'll play it.
Yeah,
it'll probably be fun.
Yeah, you
know, who knows how it's going to fly in 2023? But
little did you know, this is the game that's going to learn all the wrong lessons from Baldur's Gate 3.
David, what's happening with Overwatch?
Yeah, so Overwatch League is officially spinning down, is not going to be a thing anymore. Apparently, Blizzard put it to a vote among the teams, which is kind of interesting. And they're going to be paying out a bunch of money because I didn't realize the various teams had to like buy licenses to be allowed to compete.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's the problem with the league from the beginning, is their main source of revenue was teams paying to be in the league.
That's nothing like a pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting because I feel like the core idea, and I didn't realize this was like something that Overwatch League was the only one that did. The core idea of like having set teams the way actual sports do, I think it's actually kind of a cool idea, but the idea of like using that as the way you make money is less good.
Yeah. You have set teams with personnel. You know, there can be stories that unfold over somebody's career. Exactly. You can, have a favorite player, like an established team dynamic. Like that's like a good thing from pro sports. Mm-hmm. The pyramid scheme nature is not.
One of the things that I saw in the in some discussion around this that I thought was interesting is people discussing whether the problem was just how they televised it, in terms of like, if you think about it, no sporting event displays the game entirely via like GoPros on the players' helmets or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't do that. They had floating cameras at points.
Did they?
They
I
did,
remember
yeah.
it almost exclusively being, or at least mostly being first person.
Yeah, I think it was definitely still mostly first person. But they definitely dabbled with how to effectively use like cameras overlooking a key point as the action unfolded.
Yeah, it just seems to me like first person is not like I could see like doing a something cool happened and so like doing a replay in first person, but I feel like generally speaking that's probably not going to be a way to do it.
If you're tracking the flow of the game, especially you need to be able to actually conceive of the whole space and not be jumping around to individual perspectives.
Especially if it's Tracer. The other thing I kind of wonder is just how often they added new characters. Like, that's not really something that happens in real world sports in terms of like, I mean, obviously new players, but like just the game effectively has new rules now.
You've got to come up with a counter or something. It's way different than a different kind of play.
That's weird. Yeah, slightly more intense than a pitch timer.
I think Blizzard seems pretty dead set on destroying Overwatch as a brand. So
that's one of the biggest squanderings that I've seen happen over the course of less than a decade. They had something potentially.
I do hope that, since we're convinced that esports is apparently going to be a thing, I do hope that we have more efforts like Overwatch to actually make it interesting.
I think Overwatch was more an effort to make it profitable than interesting. It was the most polished attempt so far, by far. But probably the reason it's going away now is it was too focused on profit up front.
For my story, this is about a pending update to Steam that may be of interest to folks. Right now, if you want any kind of privacy on your Steam library, it's either all or nothing. You either say everybody can see what I have, everybody can see what I'm currently playing, everybody can see what I have been playing, achievements, blah, blah, blah. There's no ability to selectively deploy those privacy settings for things that you might not want people to understand that you are playing. It has been revealed
If you don't want to spoil the upcoming lineup for Watch Out for Fireballs, that's the case that I think is most relevant
here. I mean, that's what I'm thinking of. I actually think this is really cool. I think this is cool, even including the, the obvious conclusion that you can take from this, which is there are a lot of horny games. And I don't think that there is anything wrong with people playing them.
Except for sex with Hitler.
More options for the player is better than. We established that earlier this episode.
Yes.
So this falls into that category.
Can I share a tangent around this?
You may.
It was my friend's birthday, and so a group of friends on a Discord server were like buying him Steam games as a joke, and so we're buying him like these $2 like horny games like this. Go to select him when I'm purchasing it, and I see, oh, so and so already owns this game, and it's like, whoops, outed.
The actual story though, this feature to selectively on a per game basis just make all of the activity around a game private on a per game level, this was uncovered by the creator of SteamDB, kind of a data mined like out of Steam version of the Steam database. This was uncovered by them, Pavel Jundik, I think is how you pronounce their name. Uncovered this, and it seems to be at the very least soft confirmed as it stands.
Softcore confirmed. I mean, soft.
Yes. If you want to play a porn game, go ahead. There's an ever-expanding library of them, and if this saves you some embarrassment and you can do things in your privacy, that is cool. If you are creating content and you don't want people to see what might be coming down the pike, that is also cool. I think granular options only benefit everybody.
So. I'm saying PSA, don't shame people for playing poor games. It's not hurting anybody.
Agreed.
Probably.
Unless that's what you're into, is being shamed for playing porn games, in which case, you naughty boy.
Don't implicate me. Don't, or neither, you know? But yeah, it's don't implicate me in this. Yeah. What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, probably put an asterisk on that, because it's like, I'm sure something could be made in not a cool way. So
yeah, there's all kinds of,
Oh yeah. No, sex with Hitler was not a joke.
No, that's one of them. And obviously there are ones, you know, you get into the, like, hey, that character is drawn pretty young or whatever, but they're like, you know, ethical ones, you know, like it's not all.
You can only hide the ethical porn games.
Yeah.
And my job title is Chief Officer of Ethical Porn Games.
Yeah, it is determining whether or not that's nasty. yeah. But cool. It'll be neat when that comes around.
Letting that pass.
Oh man. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Button.
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 480. We really appreciate you taking the time. Gonna remind you that Duckstream is coming up December the 1st through the 4th, as our 48-hour streaming event to raise money for the Transactive Gender Project out of Lewis and Clark College. This is going to be the 10th year that we've done it.
Nice.
I know, right? Yeah. So there will be a landing page on duckfeed.tv. There will be a post on Patreon about it. There's a shirt. I have already created the shirt for it. You know, it is hard coming up. I'll have an idea for a design, get halfway through doing it, and then I'll go back to one of the old ones and realize, ah, shit, it's one of the same ones I thought of doing before. And then I have to scrap it. that'll be there for you, and it'll be a good time. Yeah.
High point of the year for sure.
Yeah. But other than that, you know what to do to support this channel. Support this show, support the network, all of that. The ratings, reviews, Patreon, things of that nature. Dennis, anything you going on you want to promote?
What's going on? I mean, man, it's never too early to be thinking about con season. I will be at Origins again. I will be at Gen Con again. I'm behind the scenes ramping up production. So that's top of mind for me.
Nice. Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me at Furia Games on Blue Sky.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. All right, who's got titles?
I was a bad boy this week. I didn't write down a thing.
Uh-oh, that's two for me.
Yeah, same here.
Okay, so no, I like there wasn't an awful lot of like quotable stuff. Is the thing? Nothing stuck out. In fact, I literally after we got the second no titles this time, I just wrote one down that I vaguely remembered me saying: Journey Quest, Rise of the Ascent.
That's actually a pretty good one.
Yeah. The fake Teflon name for the thing. So any
that was the one thing we could remember.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Oh. Any objections to Journey Quest Rise of the Ascent?
No, I guarantee you 5 minutes after we hang up, I'll be like,
No, you remember it was last epoch.
I'm saying for I will have the same title. Thing for episode title.
Yeah.
All right, all my mental capacity was spent remembering last epoch.
All right. Well, it is decided.